tonight, we're going to talk about, basically, it's requested by the Secretaries of Divination, which is people who are going to be helping me to record things down for divination. And I'm going to explain what divination is about, and the procedures, and it's a very, very ancient art in the Tibetan system. Everywhere around the world, they have divinations. Everybody has divinations, and everyone does divinations. But the source is very different. The source of divination is very different. So the difference in the source of the divinations will also come out in the results in the long run, and also damage or not in the long run. So we need to be very, very sure about that. When we know the source of the divinations, then it will be very, very beneficial. Why? If we know the source, we know that long term we'll have benefit. Sometimes short term we don't have benefit, but long term is more important. So I'll explain that. I'm going to do some very quick prayers to clear the air and clear the energy so that we can have a very good session that can go in. And remember, all of us can be somewhere else. All of us have appointments. All of us have busy lives. And all of us has things to do. But all the things that we do all over the place, does it benefit us long term or short term? So we have to understand, if it benefits us long term, then we should put more energy into it. If it benefits us short term, then we should put less energy into it. So short or less benefit is dependent on how much time we put into something. So when we come into something holy, if we're going to go to pray in a church, we're going to pray in a synagogue, a mosque, in a temple, or we're going to attend Dharma teachings, or we're going to do pujas, we should make our mind very rested and relaxed and think what I'm doing here, that I'm here, and not think about the next destination, and not think about the next appointment or the next thing you have to do, because the next thing never ever ends and never ever finishes. What we need to do is about the present, the moment, and to get the most out of it. To get the most out of it. Some of you here are older students, some of you here are new people, and there are many, many types of people. But the type of teachings that I interpret to people are very applicable for everyday lives for all of us. So we have education, and we're intelligent, and we like to be happy. And this brand will particularly fit you. I'm not very much into rituals. I'm not very much at this point into hours of sitting meditation at this point, and not into hours and hours explaining superstitions. What I like is to educate and to propagate and to elucidate the holy, applicable, and very modern day teachings that Lord Buddha gave 2,500 years ago, but is still extremely applicable. So what I want to say is, we should make time in our lives for spiritual practice. Whatever practice we choose is wonderful, it's perfect. No practice is better than the other. No religion is better than the other. All serve to make us a good person, a good citizen, a good-hearted person. And no matter how good we are, there's room to be even better. So if we choose a particular spiritual path, we should also learn it very well, and we should engage in it very well, and we should apply ourselves and make time for it. Because if we apply and make time for it, we will see changes in our body. We will see differences in our body, and that's very, very important. Differences in our mind affecting our body and affecting our speech. If we just walk in and, you know, chant a few mantras and throw some incense, or, you know, go up there and kowtow to the altar, or, you know, wear a cross, wear a Buddha, it doesn't make much difference in our lives, because the divine can't touch us if we don't open up to the divine. So how do we open up? Not by superstition and belief. Only by belief alone, it's not lasting. It doesn't last. Why? When something difficult comes and we can't handle it, we immediately blame on something that we believe should be divine and help us out of it. So if there is a divine and it can help us, but we need to know how, and we need to understand, and we need to listen, we need to apply, then definitely we see a very, very, very big difference. If we simply wear a cross, which is very holy, we read the Quran, which is excellent, or we read the Lamrim, or we wear a Buddha pendant, that's wonderful, but that's not enough to take away problems as they come. And in life, problems will never ever stop. That's the nature of samsara. So the secret here is not to remove the problem, but to change our perspective and change our attitude in how we approach that problem. How we approach it. And when we approach that problem well, and we approach that problem correctly, that problem will not seem like a problem anymore. Definitely will not seem like a problem anymore. So how does that happen? We have to make room and space and energy and time. And if we think that, oh, when we go to the temple or services or we go to pray, it's a waste of time. It's not. It's a waste of time because we don't know the benefit. Anything we don't know the benefit, we can't apply the time. So we put a time on it. I can only do it at this time. I can do it this much. I can do it under this condition. But you have to understand, you want all wonderful things to happen in your lives without conditioning and timing. If you're with your best friend, you want to be without condition and timing. If you want the best food, you want to eat it without being pushed and you don't want to be rushed. If you had a job you enjoy, you want to work as you like and at your own pace and your own timing, it could be longer. Why? All those things we feel produce joy and happiness in our mind. We feel. Similarly, we have received some benefit from it. Because we have received some benefit from it, then we feel that if we apply more time to it, we'll get more benefit. But in fact, it is not only those things that bring us happiness. Those things that so-called bring us happiness can even bring us more pain. So what we need to do is, we need to look at the ultimate nature of things. We need to know how people exist, how the world exists, how our mind functions, how our mind exists. We need to know that. When we know that, and we apply it, then when we're with people, we truly enjoy it. When we're at a job, we can handle the situations. If we're doing something, we can handle the situation. Handling the situation has nothing to do with anything on the outside. Handling the situation has everything to do on the inside. Everything. And we can observe ourselves. We can observe people around us, people we know. Over time, people who've listened to the Dharma, they don't have to call themselves Buddhists or, you know, they don't have to wear anything special. People who listen to the Dharma really listened. And not only listened, but applied. Really applied. They see a humongous, monumental, and huge difference in their lives. Why? Everything around them didn't change. People around them didn't change. Nothing around them changed. They changed. When they change, it's as if everybody around them changed. And so what do we want? Do we want to spend the rest of our lives changing everyone? Do we want to spend the rest of our lives waiting for people to change and then we'll do something about it? Wouldn't it be much easier if we ourselves transform and change? And how? According to the principles of Lord Buddha. Lord Buddha's principles can be taken as a philosophy or a religion because it's so incredibly logical. Logicians and professors of the West, they take Buddhism, a lot of them don't accept it as a religion, they accept it as a very deep philosophy, and it's very well studied throughout the universities of the world. And Buddha gives us that space because it's so incredibly logical. So therefore, if we apply Buddha's teachings, we really apply through time. And if we still don't see a change in ourselves, we can't transform, then what happens is we have to come to a conclusion. Either Buddha's teachings are wrong, or everybody around us is totally evil, or we're not changing. So some people come to the conclusion that everybody around them is evil. Some people come to the conclusion that Buddha's teachings are not effective. But if you study, and you listen, and you follow, and you try, you will see through time is neither of those two, but it's actually ourselves. And a lot of people, many people realize that with age. Many people realize that with maturity as they grow older. You know, that's why we respect old people very much, elderly people, because they have this wisdom that they realize a lot of things they were after before, they come to realize it's not like that. But elderly people have wisdom, but even more wisdom is Lord Buddha. Even more wisdom. So he doesn't also give us only temporary relief to our problems or difficulties or surmounting them. He gives us an ultimate method for releasing our temporary problems. And by applying his methods for temporary problems, we release ourselves, then we gain the confidence to release our ultimate problem. And the ultimate problem is not having control of our emotions, not having control of our pride, not having control of our anger, not having control of our shame and embarrassment, having very low self-esteem. And from low self-esteem, we do a lot of things that hurt other people and hurt ourselves, even though we don't want to, because we're hiding something that we know, but we can't face it. So Buddha's teachings help us to have self-esteem. It helps us to reduce our anger, reduce our resentment. And it helps us to deal with people that, there are people out there that are harmful, that are genuinely harmful towards us. Genuinely. But even with Buddha's teachings, there's a way of dealing with these type of people. That you may not benefit them, they may not benefit you, but you don't create harm in their minds. More harm that encourages what they do. So what happens is, by being a Buddhist practitioner or being a real practitioner, spiritual practitioner, you don't become a Buddha overnight. And things around you don't change, and people don't change. But you need to change. And if we don't hear this message, if we don't apply this message, if we don't put this message in our minds, then we must be prepared to take the consequences. And what are the consequences? Our anger will grow. Our resentment will grow. And our blaming of others will increase dramatically. Those are symptoms mentioned by Buddha, will grow. And our mind will close up, and we know we are at fault, but we can't face it. So what happens is that we go deeper and deeper and deeper into hiding. And then when we go deeper into hiding, we can have a superficial friends that run around here and there with us, have a cup of tea or lemonade or whatever, but ultimately they won't be around when we need them. Because why? They're not really friends. And in the end, what happens is we become very lonely, dejected, unhappy, and nobody wants to feel that. Not even an animal wants to feel that. So the answer to all of that is the fundamental practices to abide Buddha to achieve the states of mind that forgive. The fundamental teaching of Buddha is to achieve the states of mind that looks at every sentient being with kindness and forgiveness and acceptance. And if we reach a level where we can actually tame other people and apply different methods to transform their minds, then we should do so. If we are not, we have to check if we have transformed our own mind. How do we know that? If we have transformed our own mind, the people around us will grow. The people who like us will grow. The people who listen to us will grow. And support and help and care and love will grow around you. And even people in the past will respect you more and more and more. And those are very clear signs that all of us can observe. Because people say, well, how do I know I'm improving? That's how. I mean, everybody likes to be around nice people. Everyone likes to be around nice people. So if we're really nice without a motive, if we're really nice without a motive, we can attract less loneliness. We can definitely find fulfillment in what we do. We can definitely, when we do prayers every day, when we do specific prayers to our yidam, let's say our yidam is Tara, if we do prayers with Lama Tsongkhapa, if we do prayers every single day, you will gather the energy from these enlightened beings to help you to transform your lives. Why is that? These enlightened beings' prayers are a link to them. They're a link to them that if you pray, you will get the benefits. It's like taking vitamins every day. If you don't pray to them, they won't harm you. They won't be angry. They won't give up. But you see, they're there, but you have to come out 50%. So if you don't come out 50%, they're there for you. They're waiting for you. And if you do the prayers daily, it doesn't have to be long. Systematically, and you understand them, and you apply them, you'll see a huge difference in your lives. Huge. Why? It's a buildup of energy. If every single day we're angry and we resent people, we're angry, resentful, that builds up. It builds up, it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. That energy, that mental state builds up. It builds up to the point where we isolate ourselves from others, or others isolate themselves from us. I mean, there's a natural progression of anger when it grows. Similarly, if we're very miserly and we're stingy, slowly, slowly people will realize that and go away from us. They'll be very careful with us. They'll be alert with us. When they go out or do anything with us, they're going to be on the alert because they know that we're out to get something from them, something free. So when we build up that energy one time, two time, three time, four time, five time, it's in worldly terms we call it a reputation. A reputation is built up. When a reputation is built up, we have that reputation, then it will stick to us for a while. And people, when they see us, immediately, oh, that person's wisely trying to get something from me, will immediately pop up in their minds. And there's so much more to you than just that. There's so many good qualities too, but unfortunately, in the world, just like me and everyone, we have a negative mind. The negative mind is able to look at negative things more easily. Why? When we recognize people's negativities and we work on it and we associate them with it and we focus on that and we react and talk to them like that, it's a sign that we are very negative. If we see people's negative minds and we recognize it, we also see their good points and we still have compassion and we work and we forgive and we let go and we join them and do our best for them. It shows that we recognize their negative mind, but we also recognize their positive mind and we try to help them to improve. Helping them to improve is not an arrogant or some kind of I'm better than thou kind of attitude. It's more that those of us who've been in Dharma longer doesn't mean time. Longer means a person who spends their energy on Dharma and transform their mind. You see, there are people in Dharma 20 years and they're horrible monsters. There are people in Dharma who's in 5 months, 1 year, they're wonderful people. Why? It's not the length of time you're in Dharma. It is your application. Very important. When we practice Dharma, the first thing we need to do is put a hold on ourselves to blame others. No matter how evil we perceive them to be, or what they've done to us in our projections, we need to not hold on, and we need to let go. That is the first commandment of those who want to enter the spiritual path. Why? Who are you entering the spiritual path for? Independence to who? For what? Of course, to get a peace of mind. So if you want a peace of mind, if you're going to engage in the spiritual path, you can't hang out in a cave and be happy and peaceful. There's nothing there to disturb you. That's not real peace. It's just that there's no disturbances. But if you're going to practice a spiritual path, the best place is in society. For us, the best place is with work. The best place is with people. And for some of us who've been in Dharma, who knows Dharma already a few years, the best place is with people that disturb your mind. Because if they still disturb your mind, then your mind is disturbable. If your mind is disturbable, doesn't that tell you the state of your mind? Doesn't that tell you the level of your mind? If your mind is still disturbable. If your mind is not disturbable, then what happens? You know you've reached some level. You've reached some level. So it's not dependent on the people around you. It's not dependent on the people that affect you. It's not dependent on any of them. If people around you still can disturb you, and they can bother you, yes, they're doing that. Yes, there are people out there who disturb other people. Yes, there's no denying. But how you react back is a secret. The secret here is not eliminating, isolating, segregating people who are disturbing and people who disturb us. The secret here is to deal with our own mind, that we can come across that. Why? Because we can't live in a cave alone. The more we complain about other people, the more we talk about how we've been wrong, the more anger we express, the more we say, Western scientists and doctors all say, you need to express it. Yes, you can express it. But once you've expressed it, you let it go and you move on. You don't keep expressing, and repeat yourself endlessly over month after month after month, and it goes into years, and you never stop repeating yourself. You never stop telling about how you've been harmed and hurt. Why is that? Because you're not human. That method is wrong. What you're doing is you're asking for sympathy and you're asking for people not to make you change. But if people agree to that, then they don't love you. If people around you agree to you not changing and to be the way you are, then they don't love you, they don't care about you. They're using you for something. Care about you the most are the ones that dare to stand up in your firing line, to dare to challenge you, and to dare to say something. The people who are nice, hoo-ha-ha-ha-ha, around you, and very sweet to you, they want something. Even if you have nothing to give, you never know. So it's the ones that care about you, that say things, and challenge you. And the secret is this, not that you say it, they're there for you. If they're there for you, you have to come out 50% of the way. If you wait for them, then it's not fair. Because everybody in the world won't come out for you. So while we have a chance and we have people that come out for us, we should come out with them. And we should meet them halfway. And we should go, we should put all our little insecurities away and go all the way. Why? In the end, it's very beneficial. In the beginning, it's harmful. It's scary. It's you know, nobody likes to say, I'm wrong. But who in this room, including me, can never be wrong? And who in this room, including me, can never be wrong without knowing sometimes you're wrong? Who in this room? Who is so enlightened and advanced in their mind that I am never wrong? Who? Can anybody raise their hands and say, I was never, ever wrong? And sometimes when I'm wrong, people tell me I don't accept it. But it doesn't mean that my thinking I'm not wrong, that I wasn't wrong, just because I don't think I'm wrong. No one. No one. So therefore, the reason we engage in a spiritual teacher is we can learn things. The reason we learn, we engage in spiritual teachers, we assume that this teacher has learned many, many things for many, many years, studied under many great masters, and endured a lot of hardship and difficulties, and a lot of penitence and asceticism in order to get the knowledge. So this person has this knowledge. This person's willing to share it with us. In our case, as I mentioned before, we have a beautiful center, supported by many people. We have a nice aircon. The teacher's imported from Tibet, duty-free. We have beautiful images to pray. We have beautiful people who set up the cushions, set up the room, make the lighting perfect, make the aircon perfect, service it, take care of it, pay the rental, pay the utilities, so that all of us can waltz into the room and say, we're spiritual. Think about how kind everything is, how wonderful everything is. And there's no charge, there's no fee. You walk away with pure 100% spiritual energy in your lives. For this type of gift that we have received, do we put a time on it? I can only come at this time, I can only do it this time, I can only do it on my terms, this term, that term. No, if you have to do it on your timing and your term, you go and study for 20 years. You go hang out in India and Nepal and study for 20 years, and you eat one meal a day, and you wear robes, you shave off your hair, and you go under 14 teachers who will torture you to death until you let go of your ego. And then you be dropped off in some weird, strange country, nice but strange. And then you start begging people to start up a center. And you start one aircon at a time. It's not easy. I'm not praising myself, but my point is this. All this has been put together by a lot of hard work, by a lot of people who have definitely found some benefit in listening to Buddha's teachings, or else they would not contribute this. So since they have found benefit, they have found benefit. They're sharing the benefit with you by supporting a place like this. It's not the greatness of the teacher. I'm not great at all. My knowledge is wonderful because it comes from... It's knowledge based on Buddha's teachings. I may not be wonderful, but Buddha's teachings is wonderful. So therefore, this place is for what? It's for learning and to grow. For you, free, open, easy, available. What else do we want? So if we feel, if our Dharma friends and stuff invite us to come, we should feel it's a privilege. We should feel that we're very honored and we're very lucky to come. Most of us feel like that. One or two people, they think they're doing us, they think they're doing the whole world a favor when they step in. When they walk in, I'm here. I'm the, you know, I'm I am the disco ball in the middle of the disco. And when I turn and you shine those spotlights on me, I shine back on you. But let me give you new news. Even I'm not the disco ball. No one's the disco ball. All of us are here. The disco ball is what? Is when we transform our minds. So, if people inform you by the KHSMS tree, it costs money, it costs someone effort, it costs a lot of time. It takes hours to send out so many SMSs. Everybody's so kind to let you know. And what for? Because I'm a missionary here to convert the whole world to Buddhism? No. Why no? It's impossible. Why even go for something ridiculous? But there are going to be definitely people in the city here who have karmic affinity, past life imprints, that will be attractive. We're not here by accident. We're not here by coincidence. We're here because we've made some kind of connection in the past to this, and therefore we're here. And so for if we have this kind of connection from the past and we're here, that's not good enough to sustain us. What we need to do is continue. Example, if someone gives you a scholarship and you have the good luck to get that, you don't just get the scholarship and jump up and down and not do anything. Then you study. Getting a scholarship is not enough. Walking into a Dharma center is not enough. What we need to do is we need to listen, we need to follow, we need to be guided, and what's most important is this, is be consistent and steady about it. And I definitely promise you, things in your mind and the way you perceive things and how you react and act will completely change. Completely change. Your whole perspective will change. If it doesn't change, then Buddha's a liar. If it doesn't change, you really applied it. If you still complain about people around you, if you still are angry and resentful, if you still are blaming other people for your problems, if you're still like that, I was like that before. If you're still like that, what you need to do is you need to get some duct tape and put it on the Buddha's mouth. On the statues you have at home, put it on the Buddha's mouth. Tell him, never talk again. But you think that's not good enough. You'd like to put a duct tape on my mouth. You can put a duct tape on my mouth. I just put it on your whole body and wrap you around. That's it and kick you out. But the point is this is, either the Buddha's wrong, or you're wrong. So if we believe the Buddha is right, we engage in spiritual practices to change our whole spectrum of our mind. If we believe the Buddha is wrong, then we keep complaining. My friend's like that, my husband's like that, my wife's like that, my sister's like that, my brother's like that, my kids like that. Just go on and on, just complain about everything and anything. And in fact, anything that goes wrong with you is everybody's fault. You know, if you comb your hair in the morning and it comes out wrong, sue the comb manufacturer. It's their fault. They gave you a bad comb. I mean, it can be extreme as that. So either we accept and we transform and we listen. And how do we transform? We need to listen to the Dharma, step by step. The knowledge we have now, how many years of school we went to, it wasn't overnight. You didn't go into school and then, da-da-da, next day, you know everything. No. Even for something so common, reading and writing arithmetic, how many years do we have to spend in school? How many years to get that knowledge? And that one ends at the time of death. Whereas for spiritual knowledge that benefits you into your future lives, don't we need to spend time, energy, and don't we need to love ourselves the correct way? We need to love ourselves the correct way by listening to Dharma teachings, engaging in Dharma, and most important, applying it, applying Dharma. So if we can engage in Dharma without a teacher, yes, we can on the lower steps, but on the higher steps, you can't. So like that, can we not go to school, just be thrown all the books from first grade up to the last grade, and never ever get any tutorship from anyone, and we just study the books and get knowledge? Can we? I don't think so. I don't think any knowledge you can just look and be perfected and know it perfectly if you don't have anyone to tutor you. So what's the difference? If we make time and we come to the Dharma Center, it is for ourselves. And if we're with friends and we're with people and we encourage it and we're together with people and we attend the Dharma talks, it benefits ourselves. If we discourage people and our friends by any kind of weird, small little, you know, blah, 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 we discourage helping our friends. So for me, whether the crowd is 10, whether the crowd is 100, 200, it doesn't really matter. Because one or two sincere people who really want to learn, and they will put their practice into it, no problem. No problem. I've taught one person at a time before. Those who are sincere, no problem. No problem at all. So for us to engage in Dharma, it's a privilege. For us to listen to the Dharma, it's a privilege. Everything is provided for us. Everything is available for us at our fingertips. This is not like any other institution that you've ever known. Everything is at our fingertips, free and easy. And if we still have complaints, it just shows you that we're resisting ourselves. We're resisting the truth. We're resisting improving. And that's very, very simple like that, all right? So that's kind of the motivation we need to have, is that I'm very privileged and I'm very lucky to just walk into a Dharma center and the aircon is cool. It's well lit. Everything's clean. There's beautiful, beautiful representations of the holy beings around us. And everybody's got the cushion ready for us. Literally ready, and we just come and sit on it. And this place is maintained and tidy. And we had nothing to do with it, or very little to do with it, and we can just waltz in, come in, and sit and get Dharma teachings. We need to appreciate that. How do we appreciate? By attending, by listening, and by listening. And most best way to appreciate is to apply it. When you apply, you get transformation. That's the best way to appreciate the kindness of others. You can give cakes and chocolates and nice words, but if you don't transform, it's not real appreciation, because someday you're going to have a bad hair day, someday you're going to have a good hair day. On the bad hair day, the people that you love, they're going to get it. On the good hair days, you're going to be nice to them. So even in that inconsistency in our moods, that type of inconsistency in our moods reflects an unstable, unhappy mind that's trying to escape from itself. Even those moods reflect. So there are many ways we can gauge, many, many ways we can gauge how we feel and what's going on. Clear? Okay. So, like I said, I'm going to talk about tonight the Tibetan art of divination and how people assist in that and what's the procedure. I'm not going to give you everything, because if I give everything, all you can do divination, you won't need me, I won't get any angpao. So I'm not going to teach you everything. I'll tell you enough where you need to stick around, where I give this talk again after another 10 years. Isn't that wonderful? All right. And before I do that, I'm going to do a little bit of chanting, just a few minutes to prepare our minds to invoke the blessings of the three jewels and to clear obstacles. Clear obstacles, very, very important. All right. And okay, let's see. Just oh no, that's good. This frame, beautiful tanka of Mother Tara, just arrived today at my house. Tanka is a hand-painted fresco of a particular enlightened being. It's very, very nice. Framed up very beautifully. I stole the idea from another Dharma store. So I went in there incognito and told them my name was Joe. And then I looked at the idea and I took secret photos with my telephone. And then I came back and I had that done, and I'm telling everybody it's my idea. But you won't tell, will you? No, you won't. Anyways, it's a beautiful, and what we do is we can hang this in the house to clear the feng shui. We can hang this in the house to clear the negative energy and to remind us of our goal in life. Remind us of what we're supposed to do. And what we're supposed to do in life, the reminder is to achieve this state of compassion, love, and happiness. And also, for people who don't even believe in Buddhism, to hang something like that is very beautiful. Why? Tara's not going to hate you because you're not Buddhist. She loves you. And it's beautiful art. Tibetan art, I'm not being biased because I'm Tibetan, but Tibetan art is very, very, very beautiful and very nice. And anyway, this is a little white tara. This is a fabulous white tara that just arrived today. And I want to offer this to someone who's been very helpful to me and on a personal level, and given me a lot of time and given me a lot of energy and given me a lot of arguments and a lot of debates. And also a nice friendship that I've never forgotten. And spent a lot of time in helping me. And so this is for my trainer, Janet, for her. I don't know how huge her house is now, but I'm sure it can fit somewhere. See, doesn't she look nice and fit? That's Janet Dan, the greatest trainer on the planet. You're welcome. Hang that in your house. You can't say no now because everybody's watching you. Jen is the type, she doesn't take anything. She doesn't want anything. She always gives. So when she's like framed in front of a lot of people, she can't say no. Look, that's good. Do you like it?
Yes.
Of course you do. She doesn't like male deities. She don't like female deities. Once I show the Shakyamuni, she don't like that. I show the Tsongkhapa, she goes, okay, but I have. Gurumji says, too fierce. I show the Tara, yes, that's it. She's got Tara tattoos, Tara mantra tattoos all over her body. The last time I saw all of her back, all of that, so she come and said, is that wrong, is that right? Tattoo wrong? I say, it's wrong, what to do? So I don't know how many more tattoos and where, but anyway, I don't want to know. Anyway, she's got some tattoos. You still got it on your body, how to remove. Tara, right? Where? Here, right? Show us, come on. It's a blessing, it's just your neck wad. Come show, then I encourage other people to get that too. I can't hear you. You used to show it to me at the gym. Yeah, she has a nice tattoo in the back. Very nice one right here. It's not too low, she's just shy, she's lying again. Anyways, very great devotee of Tara, and she likes it. Like I said, she only prays to Tara, nobody else. I tried to slip a picture of me once, but she lost it. Anyways, I have to thank her for all the training she's given me. She's given me tremendous, a lot of hours of training, a lot. You know, I go in for 1 hour, and we pay the gym, but she goes on for 3 hours, and it goes on over and over and over and over and over. I don't know whether she's doing me a favor or trying to get free Dharma talks from me, but anyway, it doesn't matter. Okay. With the determination to accomplish the highest welfare for all sentient beings who surpass even a wish-granting jewel, I will learn to hold them dear. Whenever I associate with others, I will think myself the lowest among all and hold others supreme from the depths of my heart. In all my actions, I will search into my mind, and as soon as the afflictive emotion arises, endangering myself and others, I will face it, I will firmly face it, and avert it. I will learn to cherish all beings of very bad nature, and those pressed by strong sins and sufferings, as if I have found a precious treasure difficult to find. When others out of jealousy treat me with abuse, slander, and so on, may I suffer the defeat and offer the victory to others. When one whom I have benefited with great hope unreasonably hurts me very badly, I will learn to view that person as my supreme spiritual guide. In short, I will learn to offer to everyone without exception all help and happiness directly and indirectly, and respectfully take upon myself all harm of sentient beings quietly. I will learn to keep all these practices undefiled by the saints of the eight worldly conceptions, and by the understanding phenomena are like illusions, and be released from the bondage of attachment to be a benefit to others. Obeisance to my Guru and protector Manjushri, who holds his heart of scriptural texts and Bala, who has seen all things as they are, whose intelligence shines forth like the sun, unclouded by delusions and traces of ignorance, who teaches the 60 ways with the loving compassion of a father for his only child. All creatures caught in the prison of samsara, confused in the darkness of their ignorance, overwhelmed by their suffering. You, whose dragon thunder-like proclamation of Dhamma rouses us from the stupor of delusions and frees us from the iron chains of a karma, who wields the sword of wisdom, giving down suffering wherever it sprouts to pure, clearing away the darkness of ignorance. You, whose princely body is adorned with 112 marks of Buddha, who has completed stages achieving the highest perfection of Bodhisattva, who has been pure from the beginning, I bow down to you, Manjushri. I bow down to you, Manjushri, with the brilliance of wisdom of compassion, one illuminate darkness that goes to my mind, enlighten my intelligence and wisdom, so that I may gain insight into the Buddha's words and the texts that explain them. I bow down to you, O Manjushri, with the brilliance of wisdom of compassion of one. Illuminate the darkness of words of my mind, enlighten my intelligence and wisdom, so that I may gain insight into the Buddha's words and the texts explained. Illuminate the darkness. I bow down to you, Manjushri, with the brilliance of wisdom of compassion of one. Illuminate the darkness of words of my mind, enlighten my intelligence and wisdom, so that I may gain insight into the Buddha's words and the texts that explained. I'd like everybody to do 21 mitsamas together with me in invoking Lama Tsongkhapa's blessings and to calm our mind and to be ready for teachings, all right? We'll be very short today. Lama. Mime, tebe, tejin, chenzi, dreme, gembe, ombo, jambe, dulo, mara, jomse, sanre, kajin, gembe, tsujin, tsongkhapa, lo, san, trabe, shabba, somande, mime, tebe, tejin, chenzi, dreme, gembe, ombo, jambe, Makes a lot of crop circles all over the world. He goes to different fields and stuff and make crop circles to let them know he's here. But the last time they came together, about 10,000 years ago, he hit the wrong tune on his signal device and they turned around and left. Alright, can you guys hear me? It's working? Okay. You gotta let me know when it's working or not because I can't really hear out there. Okay, 21 taras, please. Tara's that beautiful female Buddha over there. Omatari, Utari, Toriso, 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 오마타리 두타리 토리소 Before I start, I would like everybody to stand up and stretch your legs quietly, silently. Just stretch your legs. All right, clear, huh? Okay. Do people have questions, specific questions about divination? Any questions about divination, let me know now. Just ask, and then I'll incorporate it into what I want to tell you. Anybody? Nothing? Are you sure? So everybody knows everything. Yes? Okay. So the lady asks, what's the consequences if we ask for divination and the answer comes and we don't do it? What's the consequences? All right? That's one question. Other questions about divination? Yes, too. What's the meaning of divination? Okay. What's the meaning of divination? Questions?
Does divination results change with time?
Very good. Good question. Does divination results change with time? Other questions? You have to speak up, higher. Can we ask divination for someone else? All right.
What's the purpose of asking for divination?
What's the purpose? So that Lama can get an angpao. What else? What else is there to ask for divination? So he can get an angpao, so he can support this beautiful, fabulous center, so you can put yourself here and relax and not sweat. That's why. Okay, what's the purpose of asking for divination? Andy?
What's the origin of three days?
What's the origin? All right, good. Very good questions. Other questions? Can normal as unnormal people? Alright, normal people. The only abnormal person. I'm a lay person. I'm just a normal Joe Schmuck. And there's. They have to be trained to do divination. Alright, they have to be trained and can a normal. What am I abnormal? Look, the only person abnormal here is Kandaroki. Because he's not a human being, he's an extraterrestrial. Just call him E.T. Kandaroki. And you should see when Kandaroki does one of his beautiful, beautiful, fabulous Indian dances. You'll know he's not from this planet. He learned that from a distant, I don't know, from Krishna himself or something on another planet. Okay, can normal people do it? And what's the training? All right. Any other questions about divination? Yes?
Is there bad consequences if we don't follow the divination instructions?
Did you hear? That was already asked. It's okay. You weren't. He just wants to listen to himself on the microphone. I know. Then, what else? You want to ask something, Fruitcake? Fruitcake, raise your hand. Nobody can know who you are. Raise your hand, quick. Hurry up, don't be so... Alright, that's what. Her name is Fruitcake. Fruitcake, because there's a lot of fruits inside her brain, it became a cake. Okay, any other questions? Fruitcake, got a question? You sure? How about if I do a divination? How long will you be a fruitcake? And next life, will you be a fruit again? Alright, any more questions about divination? Yes. A divination. Mm. Okay, good, very good. That's an excellent question. Mm. Questions? Yes?
Say that we engage in the spiritual path, that's the first thing we don't hold.
What, the first thing?
Don't hold the negative.
What does that have to do with divination? Questions about divination? Do you have any questions about divination? Okay, pass the mic over. Thank you. Questions on divination. Not what you're going to eat after this. Not about nasi lemak, how they make it. All right? None of that. Well, questions about divination? Rajaswabi? Nothing. Is it Rajaswabi pretty? She looks like Indian princess. Very pretty. Any questions about divination? Yeah. Can you? I can't hear you. My bionic ears is not working today.
Sometimes when divinations are done and the result was positive, but in actuality it turns negative. What is the cause for it?
So if the divination, if the result doesn't match the divination, okay. Good question. Questions? Questions? Okay. We all, for many, 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 many lifetimes of taking rebirth again and again and again and again, have created a lot of negative actions due to our afflictions. Due to our afflictions, and from that arises anger and desire. We've done a lot of negative actions, and the negative actions we've done is humongous, according to Lord Buddha. And hence, because our negative actions have been humongous, then in this life, we find that our habitual actions are very difficult to transform or change and turn around. The harder you find your habits to change, means the more negative you were, and the more negative you have focused your mind. So if you find your habits very difficult to change, it's like an alcoholic who finds it very difficult to give up alcohol. Someone who's been drinking 1 or 2 days and give up very fast. Someone who's been drinking a few months, more difficult. Someone who's been drinking perpetually for the last couple of years, it's very difficult. Similarly, like drinking alcohol, alcoholics, having negative speech, having speech that hurts people, having a lot of anger, having anger that blames people, and having isolation, and also thinking that all problems arise from the outside, and we react negatively. All that comes from habit. It comes from habit. It didn't come overnight. Nobody's born with that. We are born with negative actions and negative karma from previous lives. And in this life, we're put into situations where it may increase and enhance those negative qualities in us because we have created the karma to be born in that. So if we're born into a negative situation where our parents or our childhood, whatever, was negative, a normal person without wisdom would blame that and then continue their lives and continue their sufferings and continue making other people suffer and blame that. And everybody would believe that. But believing in that doesn't solve the problems because that's not the cause of the problems. The cause of us in a negative situation is negative karma, negative actions we created in the previous life. So for people with wisdom, or people who have heard wisdom, or decide to follow the path of wisdom, then they abort that type of thinking, and they transform that thinking. They transform it and make it positive. And what happens is that's why there are heroes in the world where they go through insurmountable obstacles as a child, you know, really, really street-level poverty. And then they grow up and they become benefit to other people. They become people who inspire other people. They show you their strength and what they do. And those people we all praise. And when we listen to their stories, we cry. We drop a tear because we're so moved. Whereas people who had a horrible childhood, horrible life, and they keep complaining about it, and then that perpetuates and they become negative, rotten, angersome people as adults, and they make everybody around them unhappy. For a while, a few people will drop a tear here and there, but after a while it gets tiresome. Why? Because we can do something about it. We're not what we were before. What we were before created us now. What we can do now can create us tomorrow. So if we continue on that path, we increase those habits. We increase those type of thinking and negativities, and we don't have to. So because we have a lot of negative karma, and negative actions we created, that can be the only explanation for negative things that happen in our lives. Because sometimes we didn't even do anything. And I often hear people say, hey, you know, that person was a good person, why does it happen to them? Yes, in this life they're not bad, but what about the 500,000 other lives that they had, what they've done? What about that? If you plant a small seed in the ground with many other seeds, if the pervasive seed is like rose flowers, but in between you drop 1 or 2 sunflowers, definitely they all grow. So in between the roses, you see a few stalks of sunflowers growing out. Whatever seed you plant, how small, it will grow. It will increase according to karmic environmental circumstances. Definitely. So whatever happens to us in this life, if we believe that it's done to us and we're the victim, then we continuously choose to be the victim. We continually choose to suffer. We continuously choose to blame others because we can't face ourselves and we don't want to admit what's happening with us. So we choose that. Now, when we have a lot of negatives in our lives and negative things happen, if we choose to take responsibility for it, it makes a huge difference. What's the difference of blaming and responsibility? When you blame or be responsible for it, it doesn't affect the person you're talking about, but it affects you, yourself. So when we blame other people, anger grows, resentment grows, and then negative habituations continue and increase. And then wisdom and logic and people that care about us, what they say, it becomes less, and eventually we run away. So what happens is, when we don't blame others, and we accept, it comes from our karma. It's something I've done in a past life. It's something I've done. I've planted some seeds for this. Then it doesn't also affect that person, because that person, they'll keep saying, oh, it's not my fault, it's your fault. You see, but you change. So when you take responsibility for it, then the difference is this, you start to make a change. Because if you make yourself in control, you will be in control. If you constantly put yourself as the victim, you will be the victim. But ultimately, you will really be the victim of yourself. Because you'll run out of people who listen to you, who will have sympathy for you. If you don't do anything, if you're consistently not improving yourself, sympathy people will go away. But if you take responsibility, you might even transform the people who hurt you. So actually, if a person hurts you or not is not the issue. It's not the issue. The issue is how we react back. And how we react back is how we treat ourselves and what we think about ourselves. If we have very low self-esteem, then the other person's at fault. It's that person, that person, this person, that person. If we have very low self-esteem because we're not happy about ourselves, our life, what we've accomplished, what we've not accomplished, our bodies, our appearance, our, you know, whatever our situation we're in, if we have very low self-esteem, we will naturally blame others. Why? Because we can't accept that it's us. But if people who have low self-esteem and they want to build self-esteem, they take responsibility for what has happened. They'll say, okay, it was partly that, it was partly me, I contributed too. For a person to say, I contributed and mean it and focus and think about that, they're already on their way to self-esteem. Why? Self-esteem is not built on being told nice things and congratulated on everything you've done. Self-esteem is built on accepting your faults and your good points and making your good points grow and your negative points decrease. Building self-esteem is not getting praises and recognition and presents from people. Building self-esteem comes from you taking responsibility for your good and negative actions and recognizing the negative actions and good actions, congratulating yourself on the good ones, not out loud on the microphone, quietly and humbly to yourself, and the negative actions, be ready to admit, be ready to say, be ready to be open with yourself first. And then when you do that, you say, okay, now I want to do something about it. First step of healing is acknowledgement. Acknowledgement. And then when we acknowledge that we are at fault and we've done things wrong, when we acknowledge, we take responsibility. And the victimization, inverted commas, the victimization that we feel victimized and the label we call ourselves will definitely disappear. When that label of victimization disappears and we don't think of ourselves as victims, but we choose that, we choose it. If we hate our husbands, we chose him. If we hate our wives, we chose them. If our kids are monsters, well, nobody forced you to have them. And the little kid didn't come to you in a dream and say, have me, have me, have me, have me, and pay you $100,000 to have little monster. We chose it. So our friends, our people, all that, we chose it. Definitely we chose it. So if we chose it, nobody has twisted our arm into it. When we've chosen it, we've done it, instead of blaming, instead of thinking we're the victim, the best thing to think is, okay, I'm in this situation. I chose it, and it came out like that because I don't have wisdom to see what will happen in the future. But I'm going to make the best of it. I'm going to stop blaming the other person because I am just as responsible as anybody else because I chose it. So when we stop thinking we're the victim, and we apply concentrated efforts into improving our mind, that is taught by Lord Buddha. Example, the 8 verses that I have taught you. It is on the main door on the right. It's painted very beautifully. The 8 verses of thought transformation. We can take that as a measuring stick for our lives. And we should read up, and I have CDs on it, and there are many books on it by very great masters, that we can read up on it and investigate how to practice it and use that as a measuring stick and apply that. When we apply that, it's very hard. Why is it very hard? When you have a very bad wound, when you apply medicine, it burns, it hurts. But that pain goes to healing. Same when we apply the 8 verses of transforming our mind to our lives, to our mind, it's very painful. Because most of the things written on there, we don't want to do. And the very fact that we don't want to do and we can't do is a cause of our sufferings. So when we apply it, step by step, little by little, it's very painful. Very, very painful. But that pain leads to no more pain. Whereas the pain that we ordinarily experience from being a victim doesn't go away. And it becomes bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And our self-esteem, with time, will go away deeper and deeper. Will go deeper and deeper. Why? As we age, as we get older, the ability for us to do anything will go away. So if we haven't built self-esteem, it's very hard later on. It's very, very hard. So self-esteem is what? Is not putting your interests first, and I'm important, I'm that. That's twisted self-esteem. Self-esteem is taking responsibility for the good and for the bad, and not reacting negatively. How do we do that? When we apply Buddha's teachings, when we invoke consistently, daily, upon our meditational deities, our yidams. Our yidams is our personal meditational deities. And if we don't have a meditational deity, Lama Tsongkhapa. If we focus on Lama Tsongkhapa, for example, every day, and we make very gentle, beseeching prayers from our heart, not just blah, 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 through the verses very quick, and just finish it, blah, 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 and well, I'm done my prayers. No, we've been doing that for years. It doesn't help. It doesn't help. You can walk into the holiest temple on the planet and sit in front of the holiest Lama. You can sit in front of the Pope himself. Nothing is going to happen in your mind if you don't apply what has been taught. It's very simple. You can go to university and not study. How did the knowledge of the professors and the books go into you? So if it can't go into you when you leave the university, you're still who you are. You won't be a PhD, MA, or you won't be a BA, you won't be anything. Nothing. So it's the same everywhere in life. You don't just say Dharma, 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 Dharma. Dharma operates on logic. Operates on logic. Everything's on logic. So what happens is, if we stop being the victim, and we take responsibility, the first step is stop complaining about others. Stop talking about the wrong that they've done to you, and stop complaining non-stop, incessantly. If you find it difficult to bear, one time you talk out with your friend, get it over, get it out. But incessantly talk about it to every victim you can find, to victimize them about you being a victim. Don't get it. Imagine that some of us live that. I'm a victim, and we victimize everybody to listen to how we've been victimized, and we victimize them, and it just goes on and on and on. We just, anybody we can find, anywhere we can find, any person, and if we can't find a person, we get an animal, you know, a goldfish, and we tell them how we've been victimized. And it just goes on and on and on. You know what? That person's not bad. That person is habitually used to blaming others. So what they need to do is realize it doesn't get them anywhere. And stop being a victim. And choose responsibility. Choose a different way. Choose a new way. We build self-esteem first by realizing and looking at our faults and our flaws and accepting it. And if we can do something about it, make it better. Make it better. Example, I've had low self-esteem for most of my life. Most of my life. About many, many things. I'm not going to tell you, because if I tell you, you're going to start looking at it. I read some magazine on some star. I forgot who it was. I think Sophia Loren or something years ago, I read something. And that they said, what's your worst feature? She says, I'm not going to tell you. They said, why not? She says, if I tell you, you can look at it from then on. And it's going to make it worse for me. I thought, that's pretty good. She says, I know what it is, and I know how to take care of it and deal with it. And I know what's my good points, and I make a good point shine. And that flaw that I have on my face, I won't tell you, but I'll deal with it. I thought, oh, very good. Very good. And I thought, boy, you know, I have more flaws than just a bad face or something, you know. But in any case, my point is this, is same thing. Wisdom and logic is wisdom is logic. If we have flaws and we have wrong points about us. We need to recognize it. And we need to accept it. And what we can do, we do it. We improve it. For example, Janet will know this. You know, when I first met her, let's put it this way. My cellulite moved before I got there. So when I went to see her, my cellulite was already there, and then I got there. Then when I need to go to another place, my cellulite, sometimes I went there first, sometimes my cellulite went there first. But everywhere I went, there was the two of us, me, my cellulite, and we, you know, I had to book two tickets. And I was 118 kgs, I was huge, 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 huge. And it made my self-esteem down because, well, my projection is that if I'm heavy, people are not going to like me. People are not going to like me. People like Koki, he doesn't have that projection. He loves himself. All of him. And he doesn't have a problem because you can see he doesn't have a problem. Why? Because he doesn't throw BFs nonstop. So what happens is I went into intensive weight loss. You know, I lost about 30 kgs. And I dieted and I went to the gym. I went to the gym later, but I ran every day and did cardio for about 3 hours a day. It took me about 2 years to lose the weight. And it was a lot of hard work. And it was a lot of starvation, and it was a lot of suffering, and I even dreamt about food. Can you believe it? Rinpoches are supposed to dream about Buddhas. I dreamt about, you know, chicken legs. I dreamt about, and it became a very big obsession, you know, and I was telling Janet, can I get some steroids? Can I get some steroids? Make it faster, quicker. She said, no. She said, I'm going to rape you. Whatever, no. I'll pay you for it. No. Nothing, I'll give you a massage. No. I'll teach you tara. But it still was no. And it was a lot of hard work, and what I'm trying to say is I had to accept the fact that I became like that, and I'm not happy that way. It's different for everybody. I'm not happy. And I put a lot of work into losing weight, and I lost it. A lot of people know me for a long time, I've lost it. After I lost it, I felt much better about myself, but that's not the real reason I feel about myself, but it was one of the causes. And, you know, when you can go into a shop and just... The first time I went into Padini, you know, Paul was telling me, oh, you should go into Padini and get some pants. I said, no way, I can't fit into those little teeny Asian-made clothes. Of course, I put that down because I couldn't blame myself, you know, because I'm Western, yeah, right. Anyways, so we went there and I tried on a pair of pants, and you know what? I fell in love with myself. I said, oh my God, that looks fabulous. And then he says, you should get some shirts from Seed. I said, forget it. Seed, the shirts from Seed are big as a seed, forget it. I said, I'm not gonna fit in that. And he said, no, you can't, trust me. So I went and tried it, and I put the shirt on, and I tried it with the Padini pants, and let me tell you, I kowtowed to myself. It wasn't just the physical appearance, it was that the effort paid off. And if we can put that much effort into something so stupid as our body, that we only have for a few years, wouldn't it behoove us, or wouldn't it be better if we move ourselves toward our mind, which we have to take with us in our future lives. Future lives. So if we only improve the body and we don't improve the mind, then when our bodies deteriorate, there's nothing we can do about it. Nothing. I used to walk into the gym 5 times a week for about 3 to 4 hours a day. And the first thing, my mantra to Janet was, do I look skinny or fat? And she's quite rude. She says, well, that's sticking out, and this is sticking out, so thank you very much. And then when I did lose weight, she would say, yeah, you look good. You look quite trim. And one time I was going to Hong Kong, and you know, with my big ego trip, I said to her, okay, we got to work extra hard this week so I can lose more weight, so I can compete with those Hong Kongites. She goes, ah, don't worry, those people are not that attractive. Don't worry. And I said, no, from what I see in the shows and stuff, when I go to Hong Kong, I want to shine. I want to walk down the street, and I want people to look at me. And so I worked extra hard that week. Oh, I really did. And you know what? When I went to Hong Kong, I don't want to be bitchy, but she was right. I was a god. And I would have been a god even before the 6-hour workouts a day for 1 week before Hong Kong. But the lesson of the day is this is what? The lesson of the day. How we get self-esteem is not a very big difference, but we need to get self-esteem. When we get self-esteem, we will react differently with everybody around us. And when we don't have self-esteem, we will put everybody around us down. And we can't face our faults, and we know the people, and the horrible part is the people who know our faults and what we've done wrong, we escape and we stay away from them. So my point in all of this is when we stay away from people that can actually love us and help us because of our low self-esteem and we make all kinds of lame excuses, we suffer tremendously, they suffer tremendously. And this comes from what? From being a bad person? No. None of us, according to Buddha, is inherently a bad person. Things can change. Things can turn around. Things can transform. If we take responsibility and we apply, for example, you say, apply what? The 8 verses of thought transformation and the teachings on that, the explanations on that. Think of it as a self-help guide. The eight verses of thought transformation next to the door, I'm not asking you to pray to a god. There's nothing on it that tells you that I'm gonna pray to a Buddha or accept. It's all about how we should act with other people, in deference to other people, and how to apply it in our daily lives. If we read up on that, it's a very, very wonderful self-help book. And we'll see incredible changes in our mind. If we want our lives to be happier, we want to make the people we love happier, if we want to have things be successful, the key is our mind. So many of us through many, many lifetimes find it very difficult to transform our mind, and hence in this life we find our negative habits very difficult to transform, our positive habits very difficult to enact, and it's with a lot of effort. And due to that habituation of many, 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 many lifetimes, we collect a lot of negative karma. That negative karma that we collect of the body, speech, and mind will come back to us in the form of suffering of the body, speech, and mind. So if we harm other people with the body in previous lives, many types of sufferings will come back to us in relation to our body, and hence the speech, and hence the mind. So if we played mind games with other people, we've lied to them, we've tricked them, and we've hurt them very much, in this life, we'll always be tricked. It's not something you can see. We'll always be emotionally tricked and used. Why? Because we've done it so many times. So if we react back, we're continuing that horrible, vicious cycle. If we realize and take responsibility and say, okay, I started it, let me stop. If we stop, then we start to purify the negative karma that we have from that. Immediately, we don't create more karma, more actions that will increase the vicious cycle. They say, why always me and not them? Very simple. Because you know Dharma. You should be more responsible. Because you've been in Dharma. Because some of us have taken refuge. So we need to be more responsible. So if we've taken refuge and we believe in something as so holy and so compassionate such as the Buddha, we have to reflect that in our motivations daily. And if our motivations are changing daily, our outer actions and our outer behavior and our outlook will change completely. And when that changes, everybody around us will see that and they will start changing around us too. It's very, very logical. So it all starts from ourselves, irregardless of outer conditions. Irregardless. And if we always blame outer conditions, then be ready for suffering. Be ready for loneliness. Be ready for people to see through us. And be ready for no more sympathizers. Why? We choose that. We choose. We have a choice. Especially most of us in this room, everybody in this room, we have a choice. Or else we wouldn't even be here. We have a choice. It's very, very simple. So these sufferings that arise in the body, the speech, and the mind can come in many forms, in many ways. If we have the karma to be harmed, the environmental conditions will trigger it off. Example, if we've killed in previous lives, if we have killed in previous lives, and we enjoyed it, and the demerit is there, and it hasn't activated, then in this life, if we go near someone who's got something contagious, we will catch it. Immediately. It's not about the immune system or that. It is environmentally the immune system, and we can do that up as much as we want. But ultimately, people with good immune system and bad immune system, they'll contract contagious diseases. And it's not a matter of they having more or less exposure. It's just by chance. People say by chance because they don't have a better explanation. It is by karma. Karma explained that much, 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 much better. It's much more logical. It's not foolproof for our level of our mind, but it's much better. So therefore, similarly, if we tricked and schemed and we have ulterior motivations with other people, if we always have ulterior motivation, we tricked and schemed and we trick them and use them all the time, we say one thing but we mean another thing, then what happens in this life, we'll always be deceived by other people. Always we'll have deception and always we will always be on the alert, and it makes us aggressive. Once an animal is born into the animal kingdom, carnivorous, he is propelled by his karma to have the instincts to kill to survive. So his cycle goes worse and worse and worse. That was the negative karma that's created. Not holding ethics and morals is a principal cause for taking rebirth as an animal. Principal. Not having ethics. Alright? Example, if you promise someone something, example, a husband and wife, couple, whatever, they promise each other something, and they trick the couple out of money, out of confidence, or they weren't clear, out of their desires and their lusts, and they trick their partners. That's horrible. Horrible. That will take rebirth. That will take rebirth definitely as an animal. And there are many grades of animals, many types of sufferings and levels of animals. And don't think once you say, oh, I'll be a furry little poodle and be born in a nice rich family. Oh, yes, yes. For the rest of your life, you'll be eating nice little dog food and be patted on and taken care of. But if the owner is gone, you're gone. If you can't speak about your pain, your problem, nothing. And when you die, where's the little poodle going to reincarnate? You think the poodle meditated his whole life? No, I don't think so. I've never seen a poodle meditate. I don't know if you have. So there's not much chance that he can do anything. So if a person is cheating on their partner, and they're lying to their partners, and they're tricking their partners, and they're using their partners, it's very, very, very bad karma. And also in the future, they will always continuously not have a steady, warm, loving relationship. But you say, in this life, I'm not like that. Yes, but you have that. Why do you have that and not everybody have that? Why is it some things you don't have, other people have? What is it, an all-knowing, you know, a big guy in the sky with a big beard, you know, telling you what? It's not logical. It's not logical that there's a big guy in the sky controlling all of this, because why so unfair? Why the disparity and inequality? It's not logical. So it must be actions created by ourselves. Example, people who groom look clean. People don't groom don't look clean. You can't say, well, God didn't groom me this morning, therefore I'm not clean. How ridiculous. Illogical. So therefore, in that way, if we have harmed other people, and we have the causes for harm, example, we have the cause to get something back, to get, receive harm back, all right? Then we can receive it. Example, if we hurt someone in business, or someone's jealous of us, and they go to a BOMO, or they do special magic, and they send things to you, and you can feel it. Sometimes you can hear it. And sometimes when in extreme cases you can experience the detrimental results of that type of action done to you. Well, you have to understand, why is it beneficial? Why do some people experience it and some people don't? Why is it some people can have a lot of BOMOs throwing all kinds of things in their yard? You know, chicken heads, dog heads, you know, I don't know, you know, Garfield doll heads, whatever they throw in your yard, right? And then they don't get any effect. They just sit there and they kick their teeth and then you watch TV and don't feel anything. Why is some of us, you know, we've got cross, Buddha, we've got pentagons, we've got pentagrams, we got fool, we've diagrams, we got holy mandalas from holy Hindu temples, we got everything plastered all over our wall and not one, you know, 10 each. And still the magic can go, ooh. Why? Haven't you seen some people's houses that have all types of protection hanging all over the place, like Christmas ornaments on a tree? Have you gone to some people's cars? They don't have one mala hanging there from high monk. They have like 20 malas because, you know, this monk is higher, whatever. And why do some people, they never leave the house without a chakra, never. You know, a holy chakra, holy protection. And you know, wherever they go, you know, anything they suspect, I feel a temperature change. Why? And then some people, they walk around, no protection, nothing. Very little protection, they're okay. And definitely, you know, there are people trying to get them too. They're okay, why? Because they don't have the cause to be harmed. Example, all of us in this, all 100 of us, or how many is here, whatever, we can all go to the most famous BOMO in Thailand. We find a wonderful, big, fat BOMO that, you know, give them a lot of money, you know, and we study under them. All of us study for 7 years, and we become top BOMOs. And then we come back here, we join up, and we do a huge magic ritual. And we get His Holiness' picture, and we send magic to him. Let me tell you, he ain't going to feel anything. Nothing. He doesn't have the cause to be harmed because he doesn't harm. His karma is purifying. Nothing's going to happen. But you know, you don't even need a top BOMO. You don't need all of us. Some idiot like me, you know, like Tender Rohit just goes and learns some crappy little spell from some crappy little, you know, Salem's witch book that he found at the library, and then he just does a little spells and suddenly I'm affected. Why? Because I have to cause me harm. So that's why some it works, some it doesn't work. So there are things that happen we can't avoid. There are things that happen that bring us suffering and unhappiness. There are things that happen. And for those things that we have no control of, okay, now listen very carefully. For those things we have no control of, in order to save time, in order to save effort, in order to save wastage of energy and materials, in order to save money, and in order to save a lot of heartache, then we would ask for a divination. A divination is to divine. To divine is to see into the future for that particular situation and what might happen to that person if they take options A, B, or C. So when you do a divination, you're actually helping that person to save time, energy, material loss, heartache, problems, and bigger loss. And when you do that, and you give instructions what to do, the instructions must be carried out meticulously, perfectly, well. And the deviation in your mind cannot be maybe, 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 maybe. So if you carry it out meticulously, it will definitely happen. And for those people who do divinations, and they feel that the result didn't come out correct, they have to understand the nature of divinations. The nature, because I've come to some very high lamas, and what they said doesn't come out. Doesn't come out. I go, okay. But it comes out for everybody. They come screaming up and down and say, oh, you know, it's exactly what he said. How do you know that? He got clairvoyance, blah, 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 whatever. And it didn't come out. For me, I personal experience. And what I realized was this when I consulted, is that some divinations immediately look like you didn't get your answer, but you have to wait long term. You have to wait long term. Because divinations will talk about past, the present, the future, and end result. So if you ask for a divination and it comes out, example, if someone says, okay, I can't have, you shouldn't have a car. If you try to get a car, it's going to be very difficult. That can be the lama trying to dissuade you carefully and skillfully so you don't go ahead and do it. And then if you go and do it, you buy that car. If you buy that car, perhaps getting that car will affect you in another way. Maybe 5 years down the line, you have an accident and you die. Maybe someone uses the car and someone hits you, someone in your family dies. So then you say, well, the lama said I can't have a car immediately, but I got one, see? I can get one and I got one. And they jump up and down and say, wrong, 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 I got one. But what will happen a few years down the line because of that car? You see, small coincidental changes in our lives can create big repercussions. Very, very big repercussions that we can't see. We cannot see. So don't think immediately, point blank in front of you, it didn't work. Don't believe that. If you believe point blank it doesn't work in front of you, then you're not taking responsibility. If you have a divination and it says it's going to come out yellow or red or whatever, believe it will, act in accordance with that divination to follow through to yellow or to red or whatever. Immediately, if you don't see yellow, immediately you don't see red, you lose your confidence. What happens is this, you can't work out the result of your divination. So those who want quick results, immediate results, quick and immediate, and they don't feel satisfied with divination, they don't want to apply any effort, wrong, then don't consult divination. Don't consult. Two, if it doesn't seem like what is coming out is correct, then don't ask anymore. And if other people tell you it's correct, you don't believe it. It can't be some people's correct and some people's not correct. It must be time, how long, into the distance. And I've heard people complain, your divination didn't come out right for me. I've heard 3 complaints in the last 13 years. Your divination didn't come out right. And I'll be very honest, but I've heard 500 or 600 to 1,000 compliments and gifts coming back saying, thank you so much, I can see the difference now. So it's very, very simple. So if it was equal, I would have some doubt. If it was more, I would be even more scared. I would stop. But Chow's not well, so he's resting. You can attest to Chow, you can listen. You can listen to people who follow me around, like Smoochie, who will tell you. People will come back and say like that, like that, like that. So what I'm trying to say is, I'm not trying to develop or propagate my divinations. I get nothing for it. I prefer not to do it. I prefer not to if you really want to know the truth. But, if it needs to be done, the person asking must listen. And they must follow through. And they must cooperate. Then they will get their result. And their result immediately might not be what matches divination. Wait long term. There are definitely results. Sometimes we're not meant to have something and we force it. We can get it. But it changes everything else. It changes the whole result of what will come if we didn't have it and we had it. Some people don't want something. They're supposed to do it and they don't do it. When they don't do it, that changes their whole spectrum. Some people, I say, oh, you do this, you take this job, you do whatever. And then they say, okay. Later they change their mind. They don't do their job. A few years later, they'll see where they end up. They'll see what happens to them, where they are, what results from that. Immediately they cannot see. Why? Because it affected something. And sometimes a lama will be very skillful because your mind cannot take the result that will come. So sometimes a lama will not tell you the immediate result, tell you the opposite, tell you something different, and bring you to that point so you have to do more practice, so you can change your result. Some results cannot be changed unless the person themselves do specific practices to purify. That there is no God and spirit and there is no protectors that can come and wave a wand and take your problems away. That you yourself have to follow divinations step by step by step by step and finish one step, two step. If the Lama was to tell you all 10 steps, you'd run. Some of our problems are very big and some of our problems we may see big now. Also, if we let it ride, it will become bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. What we see now is nothing. So if we choose to believe that the Lama's divination is wrong and that we do the opposite, then take responsibility for the result. Very simple. Very simple. And why does the Lama do divination for you? Why does the Lama do the procedures for it? Why does the Lama concentrate and help you? Why? So you can get wrong results? So you can suffer? No. It's another skillful means to give you a light of what's going to happen in the future. So it will motivate you to do something now to change it. And if you continuously don't listen and doubt and don't listen and doubt and don't listen and doubt, then you get the result. Why? If the Lama is doing divination on the basis of getting something from you, then there is a business, so we can doubt it. But if it's getting nothing from you at all, and it's totally with the motivation to help you, and if you don't follow it, that's a problem. Another problem is people who have their Lamas and they always create doubt or broken samaya or always break their promise to the Lama. This is very, very important. I want you to hear. People who break their samaya to the Lama, they break their samaya to the people they love. Samaya means promise or commitment. They always break it, continuously break it. What they say they don't do, what they promise they don't do. And they're very flippant about their promise. They promise it and they just don't do. No explanations, nothing. You have to chase them. What happened? After a while, you don't chase anymore. You let them realize what they've done. You let them think. So some people are very flippant. They can keep your pictures on their altar. They can keep a picture of their Lama, whatever, on the altar, make offerings, prostration. But when it comes down to the real Lama practice, they're very flippant on small promises. They're very flippant on what they promise to do. So when they keep breaking promises to the three jewels, they keep breaking promises to their loved ones. The intensity is less, but it's still there. When they keep breaking promises and commitments to others, even when we do divination, it will be double hard to get the answer for that person. And sometimes the answer won't even come. Why? Their karma obstructs them from getting a right answer. And I'm not anything enlightened or powerful or fabulous, but my divinations are authentic and I'll explain why in a few minutes. There are some people when I throw a divination dice, it immediately falls. As if the dice is very hard and solid and inside got metal, it just goes pluck, 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 pluck. And nobody, how many times I ask the question, pluck, the same thing. And then the minute I ask something else, sometimes when it's midway down or it hits it, it turns. It gives you another answer. I've seen that many times in my own divination. I've not told people. My close people will know. There's no reason to tell. And that's happened many times. For some people, oh my, I'll spend hours on doing divinations and it keeps coming. Yes, no, yes, no, yes, no, 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 yes, yes, no, no, yes, yes. And you just can't get an answer. You can't get an answer and the person's waiting for you. So you have to come to some kind of conclusion yourself.